You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Pick My Brain is the podcast where founders pitch me their startup and I try to give them some useful advice so they can connect better with potential co-founders, investors, media, and of course, customers. My name's Alan Jones and I was a founder myself for about 15 years, and after that an angel investor for another 15 years, so yeah, old. Some of my ventures have been successful and some failed disastrously, but I like to think I've learned a thing or two along the way, and maybe some of that can help you. So if you'd like to learn how to tweak your pitch, subscribe to the Pick My Brain show now, wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
Hi, it's Chris Titley here. As part of the FinTech Fun podcast series, I'm joined by Ben Gleisner, co-founder and global CEO of Kogo. We're joined from a windy Wellington. Is it windy today, Ben?
It is pretty windy. You know what it's like. It's that sort of stiff southerly I think we've got today, which is never much fun. But no, it's beautiful. I'm looking out on the harbour. Nice, you know, nice sea. So yeah, feeling good.
Excellent. We normally do a bit of a sort of an Aussie focused podcast, but we're gonna go across the pond now and talk to Ben. Thank you so much for being a part of the series. Let's get going in terms of what Kogo is, how it began, and a little bit about yourself.
No problem. So Kogo, we're a climate fintech, we call ourselves. We help people and small businesses to manage their carbon footprint. So I guess we're really worried about the future that I guess our civilization is going to face over the next 50 years or so. And we think now's the time to do something about it. I spent many years in government thinking we can solve this by regulating and, I don't know, doing stuff with emissions trading schemes and things. But ultimately, we're now focused more about how do we empower individuals and small businesses to do their bit for the climate.
Excellent. And Ben, in terms of the idea about doing something about it, that must have come from a few different angles and a few different trigger points. You want to take me back before the start of the business and maybe, you know, a couple of weeks before launching?
I'll take you back for a few years flying around the world to the United Nations meetings. So I was a chief negotiator for the New Zealand government at the UN climate deal, trying to basically figure out what countries should do to reduce, like how much carbon should Australia be reducing versus New Zealand. And I realized after a few years of doing this that I think we were causing more climate change than we were actually solving. And I think that's really the catalyst. It was like, I don't know if we should be pointing the finger at governments and assuming they're going to solve this. And so really the catalyst was, let's put information and data in the hand of the actual emitter, the actual household, the actual business, and let's empower them to make a change in their behavior.
And that in its own right is a ginormous sort of big, hairy, audacious goal, and then sort of breaking that down into layers below to get the business off the ground and to be a commercial business in its own right. How did you think about that before launch?
Sure. Well, yeah, we definitely started with a consumer app. So we're basically helping individuals, you download our app, you connect your bank account, so through open banking. So basically it was a way of translating your financial data into your carbon footprint. So we started trying to encourage people to sign up to an app, and then we'd give them recommendations on like, hey, Chris, we've seen how much you're spending in, you know, your petrol. Have you thought about moving to a hybrid or electric? You know, and it was really hard to build a business model around it because there are already so many people that are willing to download an app, and then even fewer that are willing to connect their banking data. So we did that in the UK. We were the first climate fintech doing that in the world. And then some of the banks started looking at us and going, hey, that's a pretty cool feature. Can you put that feature in our banking app? And I think that's really where the whole business took off, is the banks then suddenly were like, this is something that we know we've got to do for regulatory reasons. We know our customers care about it. And so we're now building into banking apps.
And Ben, the education piece behind it in regards to a consumer, me having a banking app, you know, maybe getting some data around what I spend through open banking, et cetera, and the nudging of alternatives. I mean, how careful do you have to be in regards to suggestions, recommendations, alerts, and what's education versus, you know, you should do this?
Yeah, banks are a little bit like walking up, you know, and this is a new idea, I suppose, just to say. NatWest was the first bank in the world to introduce carbon footprinting. We've now close to 500,000 customers using the product. So we're just at the early stage, NatWest being an early mover, the likes of Suncorp and Combank and Westpac. You know, it's all happening, but it is still early. You've nailed that sort of, you know, hammer, whatever it is, or nailed the thing on the head around how do banks, what's their license to operate in this? Like, how much can they say, hey, customer X, go do thing Y. Because this whole question of what's the role of the banks is something that they're just navigating. It's fair to say most banks have an opt-in. So, you know, it's not like you're shoved down the throat of somebody out in Brizzy that you should be doing something about it. It's you say, I care about this thing, I want to know more about it. So you opt in. And then once you've done that, you're then recommended things like, have you thought about your diet? And if you say, nah, not interested in changing my diet, you're not going to be told, try this vegetarian restaurant. Or, you know, so it's based on your personal circumstances and your personal data. Yeah.
That's very interesting in that personalization piece. I find that fascinating. And then when it comes to sort of the numbers, the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, it's a bit like kilojoules and calories, et cetera. And you're like, oh, what's this? Is this good or is this bad? Is this food good or bad?
Yeah.
And how do you sort of wade through that of people going, oh, my carbon footprint is X, et cetera.
Is X, it's like 1,000 and something. It's like, yeah. What the hell does that 1,000 mean?
Yep.
Three things we do is firstly, we let you know what you are relative to the average. So in other words, if you're an individual, we usually do an individual or household. Now, obviously you can break it down and like, well, I'm only a one child household and that's a baby, or I've got two dogs. We don't go into that minutiae. We give people an idea of, well, here's what the average Australian, you know, how much carbon they create, maybe 1,200, say, kilograms a month. So you can see your number next to the average, or the average Australian household might be 3,400. So you've got like a number relative to the average.
Yep.
And then what we do is we try and let you know, well, where does your number come from? You know, is 30% of it from your, I don't know, energy consumption, for example. So it's not just telling you what the average number is and how you compare. It's also saying, here are where your number comes from. And then it's about saying, well, here are things you can do to reduce that number.
And you keep going. Yep.
I was just going to say that in many ways, it's really hard, this whole thing. It's really hard. Like we as a civilization are going to really struggle. I have to be honest about this. I think it's probably the biggest existential crisis we're facing. And the more you look into it, you get a moment of hope and then you get a moment of like, oh crap, you know. So I think we need to make sure that people aren't just told, here's a number and here's another number. Like that is not the job that we have found in the last 3 years.
Yep. And then helping solve that problem, there's tools behind it, which is what you've done, but they even go a layer underneath, you know, the premise of open banking, which hasn't really kind of kicked off in Australia to a degree. It would be a tailwind for you.
It is. Now, just to be clear, a consumer app that used open banking in the UK requires open banking because we're not a bank. So we literally, here's an app you download, connect your bank. But as I was saying, what banks realized is they want that feature in their banking app. So now from almost every customer, or actually every bank we work with, they don't need open banking for it to work. It's literally just the bank themselves bilaterally working with us. So it's not a requirement to have open banking. So that's the first point. It does make it easier that if you're a Westpac customer in Australia, that you can connect your Bank Australia or other data into your banking app. That would help give you a more full carbon footprint if you use multiple banks. But again, it's not a requirement. Like, if you know, say for example, most people have their, you know, most of their spending with one bank. So in some ways, we capture your servo stops filling up the gas tank, whatever it is. Like we've got it mostly covered, and then we just are able to recommend to people based on how much you're spending, Chris, on your power. You know, here's things you can do to reduce your power bill and reduce your carbon footprint. Related to that.
Yeah, and a spend line in its own right may not also determine your kind of...
Go to Coles, go to Woolies. Right?
Exactly.
You go to Woolies, see $100, it's like, well, actually, where does $100 come from? Like, what products? And so we work with Australia Bureau of Statistics and work out what the average Australian buys when they go to the supermarket. It's like, you know, 300 different
items.
So
there's a statistical kind of overlay of a...
It's a statistical overlay, average Australian gross now. We have got two big deals with supermarkets, one in Europe, one in North America, where we're starting to get down to the product level. So we're starting to be able to see. And as a family, this is a crazy story. My kids are really onto this stuff. And so each weekend, they go through all of our grocery receipts and do it manually. And so we've actually got this. Now, I can tell you, that's not the future. You're not going to have people
scaling
on spreadsheets with the kids.
Yep.
And so we're wanting to work with supermarkets similarly. And then again, with the banks, you'll find in 3 years from now, you'll connect your energy company data and you connect your supermarket data and it'll all be sitting there and you'll have this like fully I don't know, just an efficient little climate helper, you know, sitting inside your banking app helping you.
One question that's come to mind from that is the power of the brands and the companies itself and the push as opposed to the consumer push. Like a consumer can get their data and alter habits, but if a company comes on board and says, well, this is what you should be doing, this is what, you know, recommendation, nudge, touch points, et cetera, I think the power might be magnified a little bit and multiplied.
It's basically, yeah, if you think one example is, you know, Australia definitely is a big opportunity to reduce through solar and battery technology, right? And so, you know, you can obviously put billboard ads around people should be buying solar. That's one way, right? That's sort of effective. But how about this journey? It's like, hey, Chris, this comes through the bank, whether it's a notification or an email saying, hey, Chris, in the last 2 years, we've seen your carbon. And you might already know this because you've opted in. We're not going to send you this email. Or the bank won't send you the email if you haven't decided that it's carbon something you care about. But assuming you opted in, it might be, hey, Chris, your energy is your third, you know, the third of your carbon footprint comes from it. We've worked out based on how much energy you use, you could save this much carbon by going solar. We know that you buy a mortgage because we can see that in your spending.
Yep.
So we know you've got the right, you know, you could save this much carbon. Here are three providers of solar panels that locally in Brazil can install. We have pre-approved your finance for this. So the bank basically reduce all the barriers.
Probability say, of approval is great. How good.
Approval, exactly. And then like press this one button and you'll get a quote from each of those three places and you can arrange somebody to come visit. Once you then do it, and you may not find the payback for the solar loan is actually lower money than it is the savings you get from not using, you know, power. So you could actually end up being fully economically beneficial. And the time, which is the big sucker, is super, super small amounts for you because effectively these guys or women turn up with their little solar thing and go, here's the three things. And you've literally got to like press two buttons.
Yep.
And, you know, within a few, you know, months, whatever, or weeks, you've now got a solar system that's saving you money. You can talk to your kids and go, hey, look, we've reduced our footprint by 5%. Yep. I mean, that's the narrative we want to have.
Yeah, I think that's, the creating the toolkit for people to act is much more better than the blast of like, you're bad, you know, you're doing bad. You know,
Or let's all point the fingers at the government and they'll sort it out. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, I can tell you.
Just on the business side of things, how has it gone in the last couple of years in terms of development and growth?
It's all go at Kogo, we say. quickly, when you said business, we do also have a product for small businesses as well. So there's a product where as a SME you can download, and through accounting data we do the same thing. Just I thought you were about to ask about that, so I thought I'd jump in there and let you know that isn't just for retail banks and households in Australia. We do work with businesses, and instead of them syncing their bank data, they actually sync their accounting data. But that's a side point. But the business is good. We're a 100-something people now. We're you know, working with banks across the world. We're sort of doubling every year at the moment. Heaps of opportunity globally, and yeah, so we see a lot of progress through Australia. It's definitely one of the you know, you might not believe it, but it is definitely one of the faster moving markets. North America, I'm a little bit like, come on, people. Yep. But yeah, so apart from that, I'm feeling pretty positive about the world and the progress we're helping to make.
And you mentioned two things there, opportunity and product. Let's talk in 12 months' time at the same date, same point. Where would you like to see the business, and what sort of feedback you're getting from your customers from an innovation point of view?
That's a good question. We've just literally signed off annual plan that starts on 1 April. So
well, you don't have to tell me if you don't want to, but that's okay.
if it goes to plan in 12 months' time, we'll be working with 35 major banks globally, and we'll be reaching 100 million people.
That's a significant reach. Yeah.
Pretty big. Yeah, we're at 20 million now, so we're not, you know, we're a fifth of the way there. But yeah, 5x on our reach and 3x on our revs. You know, just growth, really. It's a tricky time, obviously, so we're not like assuming heaps of new investment for that. We definitely will make some technical. We've raised, you know, a $7 million US seed round, so we've got money, but we're not, you know, there's just such a big opportunity here, you know. It's just one of those challenging times where macro headwind, but there's this massive climate tailwind, let's say.
On that point, how do you balance between you got to sort of crawl before you walk versus where you see the future?
I mean, we are building the category leading product globally now. So we are like, you know, with a German and a Swedish competitor out there, like this, when we go to these bank RFP processes, we are definitely winning, but it's literally, you know, 10 banks you could say globally are doing this, but that's 10 of, you know, 5,000. So it's so early, and I think this is the challenge partly, is that we can see the future where it'll just be normal. It's going to be a hygiene factor in 3 years. A bank needs to, for regulatory reasons as well as customer retention, they're going to need to help support their customers transition to low carbon. It's going to be everywhere. But we're just, like, you know, early. So I guess you can overinvest and overreach, and, you know, which is, you know, one of the challenges, or you can be a bit more cautious, which is what, you know, most of the investing community, and you'll know this, you know, global macro will tell you. So I'm a bit like on the fence, let's say.
Yep.
You try and
it'll be a balancing act in terms of where you can see the business and the potential for the people that have already taken on your product and your platform, et cetera, versus where others can actually see themselves. But when you're not talking about carbon data and the science behind it and the emissions and scores and banking apps, et cetera, Ben, do you spend a little bit of time switching off at all? I know it's your business and your baby, et cetera, but and what sort of things do you get up to?
Good question. The team will know this pretty well. We've got a real big mission, which you can in some way get a little bit like taken over by, but I always say that I don't work more than 40 hours, because when I want to work, I want to work. And when I don't want to work, it's really important not to. And that makes a more effective, I think, culture. And so, no, I'm busy playing footy, going away with the kids camping. We're about to leave tonight for a big camp trip. So me and my partner, we've got two daughters, 11 and 8. Busy with them. They do music. So, you know, I do piano and violin lessons with them and stuff. So you name it, like a lot of stuff goes on that's outside work. But when we come to work as a company, we come and do work, but we also make sure we have time to switch off. So yeah, heaps of good stuff. And getting healthy, enjoying the nature, doing some mountain biking.
No, sure. Yeah, of course. And this weekend, you're taking the full break camping?
Yeah, we're going 4 days, and then the next 2 weeks for school holidays, I'll be working half time. So that's a pretty standard.
I actually haven't heard that phrase before, half time. It's normally part time. Yeah. But no, when the kids are on school holidays.
It's half time. We're very organized around my diary, and part of that is just because boundaries are really important. You know, you'll know from your own business and stuff.
Yeah, like, I've got three kids, 10, 8, and nearly 6. And I do find school holidays challenging. And you know, I think it's not talked about enough in regards to balancing a business with kids, full stop, but also on school holidays, where there is a sort of an itchiness to do things and, you know, play dates and friends and camping and holidays, et cetera. And it comes around all the time.
It does, and in some ways, I think just being able to plan for that, and sign my leave over that period, and I don't know, I it's a tricky one. Like, is that irrespective of, as you say, the work that you do, like the impact you're trying to have in the world? I think there is that. I don't know if we've, you know, which we haven't got very right as a society. I think in many ways we're still, you know, we're heading down a pretty, you know, disturbing future. But even the way we work, separate from the, you know, the actual impact we can have, I do also think we haven't also got that right. I think we've been working too hard, not that smart, and we've been trading off a whole lot of things that actually really matter. And I think that's part of what we do at Cogo.
It's sort of drifted as a legacy.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I
it's
think
sort of
so,
not
yeah.
questioned
yeah,
enough well, for my view anyway.
COVID helped brought us back a little bit, but I think we sort of go back into the same old routines. Anyway, we go on a tangent, but
that's right.
It's been great chatting. Yeah.
No, absolutely, Ben. And on that note, I really appreciate you taking the time out to tell the history of the business, the purpose and the values behind yourself and your team, as well as the success that you've had with Cogo thus far, and obviously the future plans over the next 12 months or so, and really look forward to catching up.
No, all good. As I said, you know, coming soon to you. Check out your mobile banking app. Encourage your bank. We've got a few early movers in Australia, but we want to make this something that, you know, in a few years' time, there's a million people over your side that are using our products and making a difference and inspiring others to do the same. So, hats off to our bank partners and ultimately all of you that will be jumping on and using the product over the next few months.
Excellent. Thanks, Ben.
Cool. Cheers.
Listen to the Unfunded podcast, brought to you by the Day One Network and hosted by me, tech writer Joan Westenberg. We're sharing the no-holds-barred, untold stories from entrepreneurs who have decided to build a business on their terms. I'll be interviewing successful founders and operators on the grit and ingenuity it takes to build and scale independent startups without the support of traditional venture capital funding. Subscribe to the Unfunded podcast now, wherever you get your podcasts.